Good morning, everybody. It is the Osmo MLB Strategy Show. We're sponsored by Prize Picks. Today, like the video, subscribe to the YouTube channel as you come in. Adam and I are going to be breaking down what could only be described as a bunch of baseball games that are randomly thrown across a number of different slates across FanDuel and DraftKings. It's really confusing. It's hard to know why the FanDuel slate starts at 4, the DraftKings slate starts at 7. There's also a DraftKings slate that starts at 4 as well, but it includes totally different, well, not totally different games, but different games than what the DraftKings and FanDuel slate. There's different ones across the two different 4 p.m. slates, so it's confusing. But Adam, we've got some baseball to break down. How are you doing?
Doing pretty well. Anything to not talk about a single game basketball slate for once.
Yeah, well, we got a whole day off, and then the holidays, and you're going away this weekend, right?
Yeah, I have a long time off. I'm off for a week after today.
Oh, nice. Where are you going?
So I move into my new place on Monday, fly to Arizona on Tuesday for my granddad's funeral, fly back from Arizona on Friday, go to my sister's, bridal shower or something on Saturday, and then fly to LA on Sunday. So I'm going to have a fun week, I think.
Yeah, it's a lot going on. So, but in the meantime, before you leave, I'm happy I have you here to break down the dumbest, most confusing baseball slate of all time, where I'm just trying to keep everything in order. But we're going to start with the first game here, Texas Rangers, Oakland A's. This one set as a pick 'em on the line, fairly low implied run total. Neither of the pitchers are that appealing to me. Taylor Hearn, Zach Logie is going to be on the mound for the Oakland A's. When you look at these two pitchers, also both the offenses suck as well. What stands out to you more, the bad offenses or the bad pitchers?
Typically the bad offenses. Still trying to get it set up so that I have some semblance of like where the hell we're at. And neither of these pitchers are horrible either. I mean, like they're not good, but there's at least some semblance of talent there. When you talk about, Hearn going up against the A's, it's not like he can't have success. And then the same thing for Logue against Texas. So I think it sets up as one of those spots where I'm interested in both sides.
Yeah. And then one other thing to mention when it comes to the slate really across the day, there's a lot of shitty pitching options, which also kind of makes it seem like some of these, particularly when we talk about the 7 p.m. slate, there's a lot of shitty pitchers. There are some better ones in the early slate, but for this spot right here, Zach Logue, I don't think he's particularly good. Neither do I think that Taylor Hearn is. And the Oakland A's offense also isn't good. So if you look at the data we have right now for the early slate as far as DraftKings goes, it does look like Oakland fairly appropriately owned, 8% top stack, 8% chance to be a top scoring team. And then on the other side of the game with Texas, they actually do have the third highest top stack odds for the early DraftKings slate. Now for the 4 p.m. FanDuel slate, of course, this game is not included for reasons that are beyond me. It starts within the time frame that the slate starts, but just
isn't on the 4 p.m. FanDuel slate.
It is not on the,
We have them in our top pitchers tool.
Okay. Yeah, never mind. I'm thinking of the Guardians Tigers game. My bad. This is where the confusion starts to set in. But yeah, we do have the early FanDuel slate does have this, but here's also where it's way different. So on the DraftKings slate, I think we could consider the offenses, but on the FanDuel slate, it becomes slightly less appealing just because there's so many more offenses to choose from that are in better spots. The DraftKings 4 p.m. slate is much smaller than the FanDuel 4 p.m. slate. So I do think that they're better to look at on DK than they are on FanDuel. Any interest in the pitchers for DK purposes?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, because there it is only a 6-game slate. You're rostering two pitchers. They are still both facing bad offenses. God, this is a pain in the ass. So I just have like a million tabs open now with different versions of the top stacks, top pitchers tool, and I can't manage to click on the right one. So DraftKings early. Yeah. So with there only being, 6 games right now, we have Zach Logue with a 19% chance of being a top two pitcher, 17% ownership projection, Hearn 15% chance of being a top two pitcher, 12% ownership projection. Neither guy's very expensive, 7,700 for Logue, 7,400 for Hearn. And there is at least some semblance of strikeout upside there. Logue has a 20.4% strikeout percentage. Hearn's at 20.6. So again, neither pitcher is good, but at least we're talking about guys that can get some strikeouts. You're not talking about, a 14% strikeout guy going in here. So at current ownership levels, I'm fine getting to them. So,
yeah. And then also when we talk about the FanDuel slate, there's no real reason to consider these guys on a single pitcher site. And then when it comes to DraftKings, We do have some better looking pitchers in the 4 p.m. slate that aren't available on the FanDuel one. The most notable one is Shane Bieber, who we'll have to talk about in a little bit. Yeah, for whatever reason, Cleveland Guardians, Detroit Tigers game, not included on the FanDuel slate. Next game from the early slate here, the San Francisco Giants against the Cincinnati Reds. And I think this is a spot where it's going to be hard to not consider the San Francisco Giants. They have the highest implied run total of the day, and this is across all slates on all sites. Any game you want to pull out, San Francisco Giants, 5.6 implied runs on the road, ballpark upgrade playing in Cincinnati, going up against Vladimir Gutierrez. How do you like this spot for the Giants?
I think it's a decent spot. I mean, their offense has been surprisingly good this year. Gutierrez isn't particularly good, never really has been, certainly hasn't this year. 16% strikeout percentage, 6.4 xFIP, 2 home runs per 9 innings. So it does look like a good spot. You're also getting out of San Francisco, 5.4 implied run total for the Giants. So it looks like a good spot to get to. Right now we have them with the highest top stack percentage on the early slate on DraftKings. They are projected to be a little bit over-owned, 34% ownership projection, 25% chance of being the top stack, but also 22% chance of being the top value stack. So, you know, that's something to keep in mind as well. It is typically, I think, a little bit easier to ignore the ownership on pitching when they're really good values than it is on hitting, just because your pitcher's taking up one spot in your lineup, your hitters are taking up five. But this is going to be an easy team to get to. In the new version of the top stacks tool, we do kind of blend the value percentage with the top stack percentage. So we still have San Francisco being a bit over-owned here, just not by quite as much as we would if you were ignoring value altogether.
Yeah, and either way, it is still the most negative leveraged offense on the slate for both the DraftKings early slate and the FanDuel main slate. It's hard to ignore them completely because the top stack odds are so high, but ultimately I'm probably going to come in underweight to the field. Exactly what number, I'm not sure, but I'm pretty positive that I would end up with less exposure to them than the field has. Do you see any realistic way to make Giant stacks that are different from the field? Because they are projected for 34% ownership on DraftKings, 22% on FanDuel. So by a good margin, this is one of the most popular teams. But any way that we could roster them and just make it different looking?
Not really. I mean, the lowest ownership projection on the Giants right now is Joey Bart at 19%. You know, Luis Gonzalez is 21%. Tyro Estrada is 21%. At the top, you have Crawford at 43, Yastrzemski at 40, Jock Peterson, 38%, which, speaking of him, I'm assuming you saw that story, but just an amazing story from yesterday. But yeah, it's not one of those teams where the aggregate ownership is misleading because there's one or two guys driving it. It's the entire team.
Can you believe the story?
So at first, I thought it was a bit like that Jock just wasn't going to tell them what it was about. And he said that it was fantasy football related. He got super into detail on it. So it made me start to believe it more, because it wasn't like he got into detail in a way where, like, when you're lying, you just start making up details. Like, it was just so bizarre that it seemed real. But I don't know. I feel like there's still a non-zero chance where it's just like he had time to think about it. And he was just like, I'm obviously not going to tell them what this is about. So I'm going to just make this elaborate story about fantasy football.
It seems so ridiculous to me. First, the idea of like, why? And so I'll inform the people, because I'm sure that most of the people that are watching the show have no clue what we're talking about. So Tommy Pham was a late scratch in yesterday's game against the San Francisco Giants. And we found out after the fact, the reason was before the game started, he walked up to Jock Peterson and just slapped him in the face. Now, afterwards, Jock Peterson's doing an interview and he said that this related to a fantasy football dispute where he had put Jeff Wilson on his IR when Jeff Wilson got hurt. And Tommy Pham thought that was cheating the stash players for some reason, which is also totally ridiculous, because what league are you in where there's an IR and you put an injured player on the IR and you think that's some form of cheating? But either way, Tommy Pham was apparently really upset that Jock Peterson was stashing injured players on his IR. And I'm guessing what Jock Peterson probably did is, even after he was healthy, he left him on the IR to just keep an extra roster space open. But for whatever it was, Tommy Pham thought that Jock Peterson was cheating in the Fantasy Football League. They were in a group text message about it. Tommy Pham calls out Jock Peterson for cheating. They don't communicate for a full year. And today's the first time they've seen each other since then. Tommy Pham walks up to him, slaps him in the face.
Yeah. Basically, there was a benches clearing brawl during batting practice before the Giants game because of that.
And I mean, to one point, I agree with you where I'm like, it seems too elaborate to be fake. But at the same time, too, why are they even in a fan? Like, it's such random players to be on the same fantasy football in the same fantasy football league.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they have mutual friends. Like that part checks out to me too, because clearly they're not friends because they haven't seen each other in a year. I just assume, you know, they have mutual friends or something. But yeah, the whole thing is just bizarre.
So my gut feeling is this has something to do with an ex-girlfriend, and Jock Peterson just had all day to think of a fake story to tell.
Yeah, that's totally believable.
That's what I think is more, because I just can't imagine being so upset about a dumb fantasy. And I'm sure that these guys they're all millionaires. They're probably playing for what, $100 is the buy-in or something stupid.
Right.
I'm sure it's not even high stakes. It seems like such a ridiculous story that I think Jock probably just made it up and it's something to do with some sort of ex-girlfriend.
Also, keep in mind, Jock Peterson's one of the like biggest personalities in baseball. Like, if somebody's going to come up with some elaborate fantasy football story, like, Jock Peterson seems like the kind of guy that would and could do it.
Yeah. So, I mean, we'll see. I hope that there's more information that comes out, because as is, this is one of the funniest things I've ever heard from a baseball perspective. And we need some of this nonsense in baseball, like just anything that gives the players personalities, something fun that happens. Because for the most part, it's just like some of the most interesting things, which I use interesting in quotes here, that baseball tries to highlight, is like Mike Trout likes the weather. It's like, oh, really? I do not give a fuck. This is interesting, though. So I hope we get more information on it. But more baseball and confusing slates to talk about. Miami Marlins on the road against the Atlanta Braves. We have Tucker Davidson for Atlanta, Sandy Alcantara for Miami. So when it comes to Tucker Davidson, I know that he's a young pitcher that's fairly well-regarded, but the results have not really been there by and large part for him at the big league level. So Tucker Davidson overall this year, the ERA is 8.71, the FIP 4.69, XFIP 6.45. We saw him pitch a little bit last year. He made four starts, at a 3.6 ERA, 4.52. The year before that, he made one start, but only pitched one inning. So it's hard to know what to make of Tucker Davidson. We've seen him make seven starts and pitch 32 innings at the big league level. Once again, he is a somewhat well-regarded prospect. The matchup is okay against Miami. But what do you make of Tucker Davidson against the Miami offense that kind of has been shockingly okay this year?
Yeah, it's just, I mean, I guess the appeal of Davidson is that he is 6K. You know, we have him with a 23% chance of being the top value pitcher, 10% chance of being a top two overall pitcher, only 2% projected ownership at 6K. So there is certainly some merit there if you just want to say, all right, I'm going to throw this 6K guy who is at least some sort of a major league prospect, you know, into my lineups. You know, he's 26 years old. Fangraphs has him as the number 9 prospect on Atlanta, not ranked overall. It's not like he's a great prospect, but in 5 starts at AAA this year, he did strike out 31% of hitters. So even though he's only struck out 13% of guys so far in the majors through 3 games, 2 starts, you certainly expect that number to come up. I think that from a talent standpoint, 6,100 is probably a little cheap, but also, you know, do you really need to get there? So I think it's a spot where if you need a low-owned pitcher just to kind of differentiate, or a cheap pitcher just to kind of differentiate, that's fine. That's one thing. But I don't really see any reason why I'd be looking to build around Tucker Davidson here.
Yeah, and then on the other side, when it comes to the Marlins offense, so once again, this is a tale of two different slates. The early slate on DraftKings, where we have some better pitching options, there aren't quite as many awful pitchers to pick on, whereas on FanDuel, where there's, you know, a bigger slate encompassing the 4 p.m. slate, I don't think the Marlins are all that intriguing. But for DK purposes, this team has the second best top stack odds of the entire early slate. They're only behind the San Francisco Giants. And part of the reason is also, because I mentioned before, we've got Shane Bieber on the DK slate. There's Garrett Cole, Corey Kluber, Sandy Alcantara. So Tucker Davidson is one of the worst pitchers on the smaller DK slate. Is the Marlins offense one that you're going to want to get to?
Yeah, and you mentioned it too. Miami's low-key been a good offense this year. Their active roster has a 111 WRC+, that's 10th best in baseball. 161 ISO is fine. They do strike out a bit at 23.6%, but there is actually some talent and some power on this team. I mean, no Jazz Chisholm certainly waters down the lineup a bit, but you know, Aguilar, Soler, Cooper, Anderson, these guys all can hit a bit. So I don't mind getting there, especially the way ownership looks right now. We have, like you said, Miami, the second highest top stack percentage at 11%, about 11% aggregate ownership, nowhere near only a 4% chance of being top value. So that should keep the ownership down a bit as well. But I think there is enough cheap pitching on this slate that it's not going to be that difficult to get to them if you want to.
And then on the other side, we've got Sandy Alcantara against the Braves. I like Alcantara a lot as a real life pitcher. For fantasy purposes, he's a little bit wanting just because of his lack of strikeout stuff. And you watch him pitch, you just be like, oh my God, this guy has got ridiculous stuff and moves a lot. He throws really hard. You would think he would strike out a lot of guys, but that's just never quite been the case. Here's where also Sandy Alcantara looks different. We have a lot of high-end pitchers to choose from on the early DK slate, but less so on the FanDuel slate. So even though there's more options on FanDuel, the top pitchers to choose from, it's Garrett Cole, who obviously he's in play. Then there's Nathan Eovaldi, Sandy Alcantara, DK. The early slate doesn't have the Orioles-Red Sox game, so there is no Nathan Eovaldi, but we've got Shane Bieber instead. There's Alex Wood as well, and I do think there's more guys we could choose from over on DK, and Sandy Alcantara at 9,700 price tag, I don't really think is super appealing to me against the Braves, but how do you view Alcantara against Atlanta?
So one thing these dongs mentioned in chat, yeah, you can't roster Cooper and Aguilar together on DraftKings. You can still make, you know, good Miami stacks, but that does certainly hurt it because not only are you losing what's probably like the 2 and 5 hitter, but it just lowers the combinations that you can use to make Miami stacks. So like if Miami does well, you're just gonna be facing even more overlap amongst the other Miami lineups too. But aside from that, I'm with you on Alcantara. That was one of the biggest talking points in season long this year, I think, just based on how many arguments I saw about it on Twitter, was Sandy Alcantara has very good stuff. He had never really been good at getting strikeouts in the major leagues until the last month or two of last season. He started piling them up. And so it was, you know, did he make an adjustment? Is he finally going to be the strikeout pitcher that his stuff suggests he should be? So far this year, the answer is that he's just gone back to what he used to be. 20.8% strikeout percentage certainly leaves a lot to be desired. 4.1 xFIP. But like you said, still has good stuff. And even though this is a dangerous matchup against Atlanta, there are a lot of strikeouts to be had in this lineup as well. Their active roster has a 26.8% strikeout percentage, which I believe is the highest in, yeah, the highest in baseball, 103 WRC plus. You know, we know that they can certainly do some damage, but there are strikeouts here. So ownership ends up playing a big role. Right now on FanDuel, basically on both sites, ownership's coming in about where it should be. On FanDuel, 9% projected ownership, 9% top stack percentage. That was for Atlanta as a stack. On DraftKings, 24% top two pitcher percentage, 23% ownership percentage. On FanDuel, 9.5% chance of being the top scoring pitcher, 9% ownership projection. So don't really have a strong take one way or the other, I guess. I think the ownership is pretty much where it should be. I'd expect that I end up around the field there too.
So I think that's all a reasonable take. And once again, Alcantara, generally pitcher, I don't really like to rush that much. Don't like to stack against him, but we do have some kind of weird circumstances with today's slate. By the way, just so everybody knows, we have the Yankees and Rays talk about next. And then the Guardians Tigers game is after that. But as for the Yankees Rays game, Garrett Cole is on the mound for the Yanks. And he's an interesting pitcher to talk about because he was legitimately not looking good to start the year. We know about all the stuff with the sticky substance going back to last year. If you've watched any Yankee game as of late, Garrett Cole is clearly using sticky substance. He keeps it on his back right pocket, and you constantly see him wiping at it and putting it on the baseballs. And for whatever reason, that's just been okay with everybody. But if anybody's wondering how we had the sticky substance crackdown, Garrett Cole didn't look so good at points and times last year, starts the year off really poorly. How did all of a sudden he figure it out? He's clearly using sticky substance on his fingers again. It's very evident. If you watch the games on TV, you could see it. It's clear as day. You could see it on his back pocket. You could see him wiping at it in between every single pitch. And the results have been that Garrett Cole looks like Garrett Cole again, which was not the case to open up the year. So I just think he's the guy who is a Cy Young caliber pitcher again, which is kind of a bummer because I've placed futures bets assuming he's not going to be that guy again, but I kind of think he is now. So this matchup for him against the Rays, I like the strikeout upside. And I think we just consider everything that he did over the last, you know, few starts to open the year and end of last year. That's totally bunked me. I don't care anymore. I like him against the Rays today.
Yeah. I mean, even in the aggregate this season, 29.4% strikeout percentage, 5.7% walk percentage, 2.77 xFIP, even including those starts where he struggled at the beginning of the year. Overall, he's been very, very good and I think is pretty easily the best pitcher on the slate in terms of talent. Tampa Bay certainly has plenty of power in their lineup. They're not a bad offense. 106 WRC plus, only a 143 ISO on their active roster. Missing Brandon Lau certainly hurts them a bit. But yeah, I mean, I think Cole is clearly a top pitcher option. He should get plenty of ownership here as well. On FanDuel, pulling 26% ownership, 12% chance of being the top scoring pitcher. Obviously going a bit over-owned there. You can certainly go to some of these mid-range arms and, you know, hope for the best. Maybe get some better bats in your lineup. On DraftKings, also going a bit over-owned, 56% ownership, 40% chance of being a top two pitcher. But as I mentioned before, I also typically don't mind the pitcher ownership quite as much, just because you are taking up one spot in your lineup. Like, you can always make the case where, you know, yeah, it's one spot in your lineup, but it's also like the highest owned guy on the slate. If Gerrit Cole pitches poorly, then potentially 55% of the field is just dead. But the way my lineups turn out, I typically just don't end up caring quite as much about pitcher ownership.
Yeah, and then on the other side of the game, when it comes to Corey Kluber, I don't know what to make of the Yankees offense right now. I mean, on one point, you just go, hey, it's the Yankees. But you also look at the names that are in the lineup right now, and it does not look great. They signed Matt Carpenter, who had been out of baseball for a good reason yesterday, and he just hit fifth for them in his first game back because the Yankees lineup, they're so banged up with injuries right now. So this is what the Yankees lineup was yesterday. Judge, Rizzo, that's obviously fine. Gleyber Torres, he's kind of been declining after he looked like one of the most promising young hitters in baseball. Then beyond that, Andujar, Carpenter, Kiner Falefa, Joey Gallo, who's been totally shit this year, Kyle Higashioka, Marwin Gonzalez. That is not a good lineup. And I know that there's a part of us, and me myself, I think of the Yankees no matter what as just being a good offense with a lot of power in it. I think we have to try to separate the Yankees name from the names that are on the back of the jerseys, because it's just not a good offense right now. How
they
do you view them?
Keep names on their jerseys, bro.
Oh, that's true as well. That's also a key point, but you understand what I'm saying, other than you being a smart ass.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. Like, if you look at the projected lineup, it's like really good for good for four hitters, and then it just like falls off the face of the earth as you go further down. Rizzo, Judge, Torres, Gallo, all certainly plenty of power. And Duhar is kind of whatever. Kiner Falefa, pretty good real life player, not great hitter. Carpenter probably won't be in baseball by the end of the season. Higashioka is nothing. Marwin Gonzalez isn't great. So, it's not your typical Yankees roster or lineup. But at the same time, their active roster does still have a 110 WRC plus overall this season, 163 ISO. The guys, at least at the top of the order, certainly still give you a lot of upside. I think the biggest issue you kind of run into, or it becomes interesting at least, is you're probably going to get a decent amount of ownership going to those top guys. You know, right now we have 16% going to Judge, 12% to Rizzo, 9% to Gallo, and then the rest of it kind of just disappears. So it'll be interesting. You know, you could potentially get a pretty low-owned Yankee stack in the aggregate, even though there's a couple of guys that are popular.
So the thing that interests me also about the Yankees lineup is just Corey Kluber on the other side seems to be getting totally unowned for this slate. On FanDuel, he's 8,000 and project for 1.8% ownership. On DraftKings, he's 8,900, which, you know, I guess that's a little pricey for Corey Kluber, but he's only picking up 6% ownership on a smaller slate. I think he's a good contrarian option just because, like we said, with his Yankees lineup, it's so watered down. Nobody's playing Kluber right now anyway, that I like him as a contrarian option. Is that enough reason for you to get to him here?
Yeah, and also I think there's a tendency, at least for me, to just like, you hear Corey Kluber's name and you're like, oh, he's washed, because you're comparing him to what Corey Kluber used to be. He's still been fine this year. He has a 22.8% strikeout percentage, 22.3% strikeout percentage, 3.72 xFIP, walking less than 5% of hitters. There are strikeouts to be had in the Yankees lineup. I mean, even when you look at the good hitters here, Aaron Judge strikes out a ton. Gleyber Torres strikes out. Joey Gallo strikes out. So it is, I think, a decent spot for Kluber. They're in Tropicana. At this ownership, I have no issue wanting to get to Kluber some.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page there. Also, if you guys want access to all of the tools we have for pretty much every single DFS site out there, especially for today's baseball slate, which can be super confusing with all the different games and slates across different sites, you could sign up for the first time for our Osmo Plus tools using the promo code MLB Strategy Show, and that'll get you 50% off your first month of Osmo Plus Platinum. Stop guessing, start winning, join Osmo Plus today. Next game, it's time to talk about Shane Bieber, who also had to talk about yesterday in the same matchup against the Detroit Tigers. But the game got rained out, got rescheduled for today. It is not on the FanDuel early slate. It is on the DK early slate. I have massive concerns about Shane Bieber, namely that he injured his shoulder pretty significantly last year, ended up having surgery, missed the majority of the season. And now he's come back and he's not bad by any means. Shane Bieber is good. He just isn't as good as he was a couple of years ago when he was destroying everybody. So when he won the Cy Young, he had a 1.63 ERA, he had a 2.07 FIP. He had a strikeout rate over 40%. He also had an average fastball velocity of 94.3 miles per hour. Post-shoulder surgery, Shane Bieber has an average fastball velocity of 91.2 miles per hour. Now, with that said, he has a 3.55 ERA, a 3.25 FIP. He's delivering good results. Here's the one issue that I have with Shane Bieber as a DFS play. I feel like people are generally still rostering him as if he was the guy from a couple of years ago. So for today, for instance, and by the way, this is once again only for DraftKings. He isn't on the FanDuel slate. He's 9,200, so reasonable salary, but he's projected for 60% ownership. And I just don't think Shane Bieber in his current form warrants 60% ownership, even if it is against the Tigers offense. I'm going to play Bieber on this slate. I'm going to be underweight to the field on him, though, and I'm also going to be making some leverage stacks with the Tigers just because I do think that there are some concerns with Bieber going forward that he's just not going to be the guy he was in the past. But how do you view Bieber?
Yeah, I mean, I think those are all reasonable points. The one counterpoint that I would give to the, you know, your argument that people are treating him like the same Shane Bieber is he's not priced like he's the same Shane Bieber. He's 9,200 on DraftKings. You're facing a Tigers team that their active roster has the worst WRC plus in baseball by 12 points. Oakland is 29th with an 87 WRC plus. The Tigers are 30th at 76. They have a 25.1% strikeout percentage, which is higher than every team except for Atlanta. So it's a really good spot, and he's 9,200. Like, if you were talking about Cy Young Shane Bieber, he'd be, you know, 10.8 or 11K. He'd be a little bit more expensive than Cole, most likely, and you would, you know, be making a decision at the same price point. So I do think that, you know, is like the one distinct difference is, and then also, you know, he is still striking guys out, you know, and you mentioned that he has a 24% strikeout percentage. So he's $500 less than Sandy Alcantara, and his strikeout percentage is 4 points higher. My concerns, and you know, to echo yours, the fastball velocity is down. But then also, if you look at like all of his plate discipline numbers, they are also down. His called strike plus swinging strike percentage this year, 28.7%. Last year it was 33.5%. The year before that it was 33.8%. Called strike percentage is down 2 points from last year. Swinging strike percentage is down 3 points. Chase percentage on pitches out of the zone is down 4 points. So it's not like you can just look to him and say like, oh, that fastball velocity is not mattering. He's still getting guys to chase pitches. He's still getting guys to swing and miss. He's not. And then if you also look at expected numbers versus actual numbers so far this year, righties, a 185 actual ISO, 244 expected ISO, 368 actual WOBA, 368 expected WOBA. Lefties, a 0.061 actual ISO, 125 expected ISO, 209 actual WOBA, 272 expected WOBA. So he is, I think, outperforming. If his stuff holds here for like the rest of the season, I think his numbers do get worse from this point on. But I still don't think he's bad. I still think this price point is fine in the context of the slate. And I still think the matchup is great. So all of that said, I'm still probably going to play a good amount of Shane Bieber here. But I also agree with your points that there is a lot more risk than there would be if we were talking about pre-injury Shane Bieber.
Yeah. And I mean, also, obviously, the matchup and the price point is good in this spot. So I'm not going to call him an outright fade. I just don't think I'm going to ultimately get to 60% of them. One other thing I'll mention. His strikeout prop is fairly low at sportsbooks. It's 6.5. I like the over on that number. Does that seem reasonable to you?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Bieber 6.5. And then some of the alternate lines also, like you could get him for eight plus strikeouts is like plus 200. I think those are also some value bets because once again, as much as I have some concerns about Shane Bieber, it's a little bit mitigated because of the matchup against the Detroit Tigers, as opposed to when he faces better offenses this year. And those might be some instances where I'm much more inclined to stack against Shane Bieber. For this, I'm okay with it on DK just because of the ownership. But once again, it's over the course of like 150 lineups. I'd be willing to make, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5% Tiger stacks. But there's going to be a day where I think I'm going to be able to make good money stacking heavily against Shane Bieber. That day will come. The Tigers aren't the team I'm going to stack heavily against Bieber, though. On the other side, Alex Fado, F-A-E-D-O.
I think it's Fado.
All right, so Alex Fado pitching for the Detroit Tigers against Cleveland. What do you make of Fado, who's a pitcher that we don't really have that much information on yet?
Yeah, I know he's well-regarded within Detroit's system. I'm pulling his numbers back up now because I haven't seen anything about him in a while. I just know he had plenty of success in the minors. He was the first-round pick in 2017. Fangraphs actually has him as the 16th ranked prospect in the Tiger system, not ranked overall. He is 26 now. So, he lost a couple seasons to injury. That's what it was. I knew at one point he was highly regarded. So he only threw 15 and two thirds innings. Oh no, he didn't pitch at all in 2020. He didn't pitch at all in 2021. This year, 10 and two thirds at single A, five innings at triple A, 21 innings and four starts at the majors. Did, you know, have good strikeout numbers in that very limited time in the minors this year. Had good strikeout numbers at double A in 2019. So far through his first four starts in the majors, only a 16% strikeout percentage. Probably comes up going forward, but, you know, also at this point, just a really big question mark, since we know he's talented. We know that he was highly regarded, but then between COVID and injuries and, you know, whatever, he missed two full seasons.
Yeah. And from what we've seen from him thus far this year, once again, it's only 21 innings. He doesn't project all that well in Zips or Steamer. Zips has him as a low strikeout guy with a 4.96 ERA this year. Steamer as a low strikeout guy with a 4.63 ERA. When there's a pitcher that I have very little information on, I don't pretend to know more than I do. So I feel like this is probably a pretty good spot to stack Cleveland against him, although the field also seems to be there because Cleveland is pretty popular on DraftKings today. They're projected for 14.5% ownership. So they actually are the second most popular offense on the slate behind San Francisco. It seems like an okay enough spot, although once again, one that I'll likely be underweight to the field on just because they are projected to be very popular.
Yeah, and also none of the underlying stuff really stands out as being great. Like his average fastball velocity is 92.5 miles an hour, 11% swinging strike percentage so far, 15% called strike percentage, 26% called plus swinging strike percentage. Like there's nothing that stands out where it's just like, oh, the strikeouts aren't there yet, but they're coming. Just kind of looks like a guy. So I'm with you. Cleveland seems fine. They've been better offensively this year than I expected so far, kind of similar to Miami. Ninth best WRC plus. 154 ISO, very, very difficult team to strike out, in part because of Jose Ramirez and Stephen Kwan pushing down the strikeout numbers a lot. But there is some speed here as well. So like, while it's not a team that you look at having a ton of power outside of Jose Ramirez, you do have speed with Straw and Rosario. Ramirez can steal. So I do think it's a pretty decent stack.
All right, the next game, and this one is on FanDuel, but is not on DraftKings. This is on the FanDuel main slate, not on either DK slates. Very odd that they've opted to include the second part of the Red Sox-Orioles doubleheader, mostly because FanDuel typically does not include doubleheaders. DraftKings does, but for whatever reason, this is on the FanDuel slate, not on the DraftKings slate. For the Baltimore Orioles, there's no starting pitcher, which makes it kind of hard to know what to make of the Red Sox offense. I assume it's going to be a good spot for the Red Sox offense because the Orioles don't have good pitchers. I doubt they have one that they could just grow on a tree and throw out there today. So for now, we'll just say it as I assume this is going to be a good spot for the Boston offense. I assume they're going to end up being very popular as well because they've crushed the last couple of slates. Starting for the Boston Red Sox, Josh Winkowski is going to be on the mound making his major league debut. So when it's a debut, we don't have very much information on him, obviously. He is 23 years old. He is an unranked prospect, but he has delivered pretty decent minor league results this year. He has made seven AAA starts. He's made, and in those starts, 31 innings, 3.13 ERA, 2.8 FIP. Last year in AAA, he had a 2.25 ERA and a 3.28 FIP. In AA last year, less desirable results, 4.14 ERA, 4.02 FIP. So, Adam, what do you make of this game as a whole on FanDuel, or do we just need more information here?
Yeah, I mean, I think we need more information. I'm seeing Denny Reyes listed somewhere as the potential starter for Baltimore. I know nothing about him, even as an Orioles fan. 19 innings pitched at AAA this year, struck out a lot of guys. 25.8% strikeout percentage at AAA, two innings out of the bullpen so far in the majors. He's not one of their top pitching prospects, I know that. So probably just a guy that is they're using as a placeholder right now. Like, they're not ready to bring up Grayson Rodriguez, they're not ready to bring up DL Hall. So you get like the second tier of guys that get to come up and pitch in the big leagues for a season before they disappear and are never heard from again. So it should end up looking like a good spot for Boston. On the other side, I know nothing about this guy. I'm looking him up now. Baltimore is a team that I get to somewhat frequently just because as a whole, their offense isn't very good, but the top of the offense is fine. Like, you do have power typically 1 through 6 for the Orioles. Fangraphs has Josh Winkowski as the 27th prospect in Boston's organization. So Doesn't seem like anybody who's particularly highly regarded. 31 innings and 7 starts at AAA this year. 27.9% strikeout percentage, 5% walk percentage. Both of those numbers are good. So he's somebody who probably does have some upside in this matchup. But as I was saying about Baltimore, their overall numbers get dragged down a bit. But, you know, Mullins, Mancini, Santander, Hayes, Rutschman, Mountcastle, all of those guys can hit. Odor has been coming around a bit lately. So I do think that against an unproven pitcher, Baltimore is a pretty interesting stack.
Yeah, and also if we have to pull one thing, here's one bit of information I could throw out about Winkowski. He does appear to be stretched out. He went 6 innings in each of his last 2 AAA starts. The last one didn't go well, though. He pitched 6 innings. He gave up 5 runs. So we'll see. There's very little information here. There was no betting line when I looked at it this morning. I see some people in the chat say take the over in the Boston Red Sox-Baltimore Orioles game. Well, if you watched yesterday's game, you'd certainly be inclined to take the over, but you probably want a line before you just blindly bet the over on it, because it could be anywhere from, you know, 8.5 to like 10.5 or 11 runs. So certainly need some more information on there. And, you know, later in the day when guys are doing the live before lock show, we'll have more clear information on some of the starting pitchers in these games and whatnot. So like the video, subscribe to the YouTube channel and check out MLB Live Before Lock later on in the day. All right, now
good,
we
good
get
point to, from Stephen Leibowitz too. Both of those teams used their bullpen a lot yesterday in the Orioles major comeback win. So and Baltimore's bullpen had been kind of burned recently anyway, so you could definitely see some bullpen implosions today in a doubleheader from two teams that just overworked their bullpen already.
Yeah, actually that is a really good point, because I'm kind of like, what happens if who's starting for Baltimore in the early game?
Supposedly Reyes, but who knows.
No, that's in the early game, though, not the in the early, because it's a doubleheader. The late game, Reyes is starting.
Jordan Lyles, I think.
Yeah, and Jordan Lyles isn't all that good either. Like, if Jordan Lyles gets hit early, this could be a disaster for the Orioles. They burned their bullpen yesterday, and then they might have to. At least the Red Sox have Nathan Eovaldi pitching in the early game, and he could just eat innings. But
Lyles will probably eat innings one way or the other. They let him throw like 118 pitches last start or something.
Oh, that's going to be a disaster. This is setting up for Boston to go out and score a million runs again, isn't it?
Yeah.
All right, cool. Yeah, yesterday were.
I wouldn't be surprised at all, like, if Lyles has like one of the longest leashes we've ever seen as a starting pitcher in this game.
he's gonna go out and throw 130 pitches.
I mean, he's kind of, they've been using him sort of in that role. Like, granted, he has pitched pretty well in these starts too. It's not like they're just putting him out there to give up 10 runs, but like, I think it might be 2 starts in a row where the bullpen's been in a shitty situation, and he's basically just gone out there and thrown like 108 and then like 115 pitches or something. And, you know, after the game, basically been like, yeah, I needed to go out there and do my job because they couldn't pitch today.
I mean, if you're the Orioles, you might as well, like, because this is a team, they're clearly not winning today. They're trying to build for the future. They've just called Rutschman up. But, you know, in general, they have some young pitching prospects that are in the minor leagues that could be good at some point. Maybe just go like,
prospect.
What's that?
The best pitching prospect in the minor
league. So I think you might just look at Jordan Lyles and be like, hey, who gives a shit about this guy? He's not part of our future plans. We're not winning now. Let's just destroy this guy. He throws as many pitches as we can. We've got a doubleheader. Then we see what happens in the second game. So, yeah, maybe we just do see Jordan Lyles throw a whole bunch of pitches. Does that make him at all interesting to you, potentially, as a contrarian pitching op? You just be like, maybe they just let him pitch forever?
Is he on a slate?
For the early FanDuel slate.
Oh, okay.
So never mind. Sorry, I messed that up. Yeah, you're right. You're right. Yeah, I was thinking about that incorrectly. Yeah, not on the slate. So whatever, screw what I just said. And wow, it just got really dark here. It's about to start storming. But all right, now it's time to go to the main DraftKings slate. This is also still games that are on the FanDuel slate as a whole, but I'm switching over some of the tools I'm looking at on the site to the DraftKings main slate now, because we now have the Mets-Phillies game. For the Mets, Taiwan Walker is going to be on the mound. For the Phillies, Zach Eflin. I'm not really enamored with either of the starting pitchers on this slate, but once we start to get into the main slate for DraftKings, the pitching options suck. They are really, really difficult to parse, so just for reference, the number one pitcher we have in the top pitchers tool for the DraftKings late slate is Joe Musgrove. That's a no-brainer. I think everybody will agree with him being in the best spot against Pittsburgh. The pitcher with the second best top pitcher odds is Johnny Cueto for the late slate tonight, which I can't say I really feel all that great about. He's also going to be chalk. But with that in mind, with the pitchers being this poor, does it make you interested in Eflin or Taiwan Walker?
Maybe a little bit, just because, like you said, the pitchers aren't very good, and the pitchers that do have some talent are in good or in bad matchups, with the exception of Musgrove. Like, Kikuchi is going to get some ownership. He's also facing the Angels. Logan Gilbert is good, has good stuff. He's facing Houston. So, you know, kind of like good luck in those matchups. You can either take them in dangerous matchups, or you can take bad pitchers in better matchups. Eflin at 6,900 against the Mets, I think is fine. 13% projected ownership, 15% top two pitcher percentage. Taiwan Walker has been striking out nobody this season, 14.9% strikeout percentage. He was someone that I know you and I had talked about a lot last year. You know, he started the year out well, then pretty clearly got hurt and just kept pitching through it, and his numbers fell off of a cliff. So far this year in six starts, those numbers are even worse. They haven't returned. He's been okay from a run prevention standpoint, 4.15 xFIP, but certainly not feeling good about getting to him at, you know, a 15% strikeout percentage. I think if I had to go to one side, I'd go to Eflin, who does have a 23% strikeout percentage, 3.3 xFIP. He's at least had some success this year, even though the matchup is certainly difficult.
Yeah, and then when it comes to the offenses, at least for the DraftKings slate, the Phillies do have the third highest top stack odds. The Mets have the fourth highest. In terms of ownership, the Phillies are going to be somewhat popular. The Mets do look underowned. I think both the Mets and the Phillies have good offenses. Neither of these pitchers are particularly good. Here's where the main slate gets tricky for DraftKings. I think almost every offense is in play because the pitchers are in general bad across the board, with the exceptions being, you know, like Joe Musgrove and Logan Gilbert. And other than that, like, I don't feel good about anybody. For Johnny Cueto is going to be 30% owned today. That says a lot about the pitching on tonight's slate over on DraftKings. So I think relative to the other pitchers, Walker and Eflin are probably better than a lot of the guys, but they still aren't stacking against.
Yeah, agreed. I think the Eflin spot in particular stands out as one to me where I'll just end up on both sides of it probably, because he does look like he's going a bit underowned as a pitcher, but the Mets also look like they're going a bit underowned as a stack. 7% aggregate ownership, 10% chance of being the top stack. And while Eflin is having a solid season, the Mets have been the fourth most productive offense in baseball with a 120 WRC plus. 146 ISO leaves a little bit to be desired, but we know that there's power in this lineup. You know, Nimmo has power, Lindor, Alonso, McNeil's a pretty good hitter. Marte has plenty of speed in addition to some power. So we know the Mets are still a high upside lineup here. I think I probably end up getting to both sides there. On the Philly side, certainly like the matchup against Walker. This is another offense that has a ton of power. I'm less likely to get to Walker than I am Eflin. So it might just be, you know, I get to the Phillies and not a whole lot of Walker. But in general, I think there's just a lot to like in tournaments from this game.
All right, let's move on to the next game. Los Angeles Dodgers on the road against the Arizona Diamondbacks. And relative to recent expectations, I guess last night was a down game for the Dodgers offense because they only scored 6 runs. But this is an offense that has absolutely been crushing. They've also been in a lot of favorable matchups against bad pitchers, which will happen when you face the Arizona Diamondbacks. So Merrill Kelly, not that I think he's a stud or anything like that, but he's certainly a better pitcher than what the Dodgers have faced in recent matchups. And the numbers are pretty solid this year for Kelly, 3.49 ERA, 3.12 FIP. So on this later slate where the Dodgers have the highest top stack odds for what feels like the 8th consecutive slate, it's going to be different for the FanDuel slate where we have teams like the San Francisco Giants going up against Vladimir Gutierrez. But how high of a priority are the Dodgers for you in what isn't the easiest matchup in the world against Merrill Kelly?
Yeah, I mean, I do think they look good just because they're not getting a ton of ownership. The ownership's similar to the Phillies. It's less than the White Sox are getting. It's similar to the Padres and the Angels. And we have the Dodgers with the highest top stack percentage by a lot at 19%. Kelly, like you said, he's a decent pitcher, but he doesn't miss bats either. And I love pitchers, or I love getting to really high upside offenses that are going to be allowed to put the ball in play. Kelly's only struck out 20.3% of hitters, 4.13 xFIP so far this season. And you just have so much power top to bottom in the Dodgers lineup that at current ownership, I love getting there.
Yeah. And then, like I said, on FanDuel as well, they look underowned. And the FanDuel slate also is just inherently different because there's more teams to roster here. But even so, they are a little bit underowned with a 10.8% ownership share, 12.7% top stack odds. But on DraftKings, I do agree that they're a really high priority. This has been the team that I've stacked the most. I don't even know how many slates in a row now. But there's been a whole lot of slates as well. We're like, hey, the Dodgers are playing. I'm getting to them. It's a good spot. And then they're always popping up as underowned too, because I guess a lot of it's just price point related where they're really expensive, but that hasn't really been problematic on a lot of these slates. And it isn't tonight either, because the pitchers generally suck. So I don't really think there's an opportunity cost with paying up for offense.
Yeah, I've been jamming Dodgers pretty much every slate, because it's just been that, like, there's always one or two offenses that pull enough ownership to where the Dodgers are popular, but they're not any more popular than a couple of other offenses, and they're always the one that I want to get to the most. So, and that's kind of how it looks right now too. Like, they're going to be one of the most popular offenses, but they're not, they're just on par with so many other teams that don't look as good as the Dodgers do.
All right. So I was about to move on to the next game, but I forgot. We still have Tony Gonsolin to talk about pitching for the Dodgers against the Diamondbacks. So on paper, this is a good matchup for Gonsolin. And another thing also to consider is that the pitching options are not all that great on the DraftKings slate, at least for the late one that we've talked about. But Gonsolin rarely works deep into games. Now, with that said, he did go six innings in each of his last two. Do you think this is a sign of things to come for Gonsolin, where he could actually regularly go six innings? Or are we just going to see him go back to pitching four and five innings?
Yeah, I mean, I think you can kind of expect it, because it's also not that he was like super efficient and just happened to go six innings. He threw 92 and 90 pitches, which were his two highest pitch counts of the year. So I'm expecting that you still see some of that. And it does make him look pretty good going up against Arizona on a slate where pitching is really shaky. $9,100 price tag. Right now, we only have him projected for 8% ownership with a 16% chance of being a top two pitcher. If that holds, I like getting to Gonsolin. Not super confident that it does hold, but the way it looks right now, I like Gonsolin quite a bit.
Yeah, I agree, especially for this late DraftKings slate. I don't think there's any reason to consider him on the FanDuel slate on single pitcher site, but when we just talk about the DK slate and some of these pitchers here, I mean, our current ownership projections, no surprise, Joe Musgrove is projected for 60% ownership. Then you have 31% ownership going to Johnny Cueto, 23% for Kikuchi. The fact that you could get Gonsolin at 8% ownership relative to those guys, that's pretty appealing to me, because I like his matchup. I also like the fact that I think he's better than a lot of these pitchers. So I don't know what I'm missing. Maybe there's going to be something where the ownership updates later will be more popular, but at least as of now, he's my favorite tournament pitcher relative to ownership.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Like, again, I think that ownership comes up, but if it doesn't, I like it.
All right, so let's move on to the next game, Chicago Cubs against the Chicago White Sox. It looks like Keegan Thompson is going to be starting for the Cubs. Earlier in the day when I was putting together my notes and data for both of these slates and the millions of different games we have to talk about, the Cubs had not announced a starting pitcher. But for right now, I'm going to assume it's Keegan Thompson. But before we do, what the hell do we make of Johnny Cueto being projected as a chalk play tonight?
I mean, I understand it, because he's cheap. He's facing the Cubs. He's somehow had some success so far this year in a limited sample. 26% strikeout percentage, 3.31 xFIP. But doesn't make me feel very good, because I think this is pretty clearly an example of, and keep in mind, that was through two starts in the majors. I think this is pretty clearly an example of more so like, well, there's red flags everywhere else too, so everybody's just going to land on Johnny Cueto because he projects well, more so than like Johnny Cueto on his own deserves all this ownership. So that's like what's different to me than Musgrove, for example, you know, getting a lot of ownership. Musgrove in this spot, no matter what the slate looked like, would be a very popular pitcher. Cueto in a ton of spots is just not going to get a lot of ownership, but because there's huge question marks about everybody else on this slate, he's projected to pull 31%. The counterpoint there, though, is that, you know, you have question marks about other guys too, and it's not like the ownership is super low. Like, if you're looking for a cheap pitcher to get to other than Cueto, Kikuchi's got a brutal matchup and is still getting 23% ownership. Urquidy's got a tough matchup and is still getting 28% ownership. JT Brubaker is not even that cheap and also isn't very good. Zach Eflin's got a tough matchup, so, and getting 13% ownership. So I don't think that there's like a clear, there's not like a clear cut cheap pivot for me either, but I do think Cueto's going a bit overowned.
Yeah, I like the Cubs as a contrarian stack simply because I don't believe in Johnny Cueto. Also, I hope my power just hold up for the next like 15 minutes, because it is pouring here now and my bandwidth I could see is starting to, everything's starting to get a little blurry on my screen. So if I cut out, that's what the reason is. But that's how, when it comes to Johnny,
because I have like no list of anything as far as.
So I'll do my, I guess I'll just sit here with my fingers crossed and hope everything works out. But so with Johnny Cueto, his minor league numbers were not good at all this year, which is also something that makes me really skeptical of his big league performance. That he hasn't been good in the big leagues for like, I don't know, 8 years or something ridiculous. But here's what Cueto did in the minor leagues this year when he was ramping up to making big league starts. He pitched 15 innings, gave up 9 runs. He gave up 3 homers in the minor leagues across 15 innings. This is not good information, and it makes me really skeptical of what we saw out of him in the big leagues. Like, maybe is it a thing where he was just ramping himself up and he didn't have all his arm strength there? Perhaps, but it's hard for me to think that he just sucked in the minor leagues and then he's like, hey, I'm going to go up to the major leagues and try harder to get guys out. I think it's just a fluke that he's pitched well in 12 innings. I'm going to want to get underway to him. I'm going to take stacks. I'm going to take chances stacking the Cubs just because I think Cueto is washed.
I mean, the one thing that I think possibly did happen, and it kind of goes exactly with what you're saying about trying harder in the majors, he's like a gimmicky pitcher at this point. He relies on like keeping your timing off, not by changing speeds, but by like changing the speed of his delivery and like screwing with your timing that way. If he was in the minors, just kind of like getting his arm loose and pitching like a normal person and getting lit up, I do think it's fair to say he'd be maybe a little bit better in the majors because he does just do so much weird shit that messes with hitters' timing. But at the same time, that still doesn't make me feel very good about him. Like, if your success is dependent on you being able to just like screw with hitters in a gimmicky, bizarre way, I don't feel great about you having long-term success.
Yeah, and I mean, he's made it work to this point, but we'll see. If that ownership changes, I'll feel differently. It seems crazy to me that Cueto would actually end up being over 30% owned, but maybe that's just what it will be because this late slate on DK is so weak for pitching. On the other side, assuming that it is Keegan Thompson who ends up starting for the Cubs, what do you make of him? Because he actually has delivered some okay results this year, although with that said, also a guy that hasn't generally worked very deep into games.
Yeah, he does have some decent numbers, about a 23% strikeout percentage. He's not any sort of a prospect. He's 27 years old, hasn't really had success before. He pitched in the majors last year, 6 starts, 32 innings pitched, struck out 22.6% of hitters. So far this year, 2 starts, 10 total appearances, 35 innings, 23% strikeout percentage. I don't think you can really have any confidence in him. 48 pitches last time out, 65 the game before that, 61 the game before that. He is really cheap and not getting ownership. So like, I could see using him just in a lineup, you know, in lineups where it's just like, all right, I need a cheap pitcher. Maybe I can't even afford like Zach Eflin or Cueto, you know, or I don't want Cueto's ownership or whatever. And he kind of just sneaks into some lineups that way, but certainly not anybody that I have anything to point out, like that makes me confident he's going to pitch well.
Yeah, and I think we're on the same page there. And then also the length of the game is kind of a concern because he's been in and out of the bullpen and the starting rotation. So we haven't seen him work deep into games. His last outing, he pitched 3 innings, but it was out of the pen. The game before that, he started and pitched 5 innings. The game before that, 4 innings. So it's going to be hard to consider him for DFS just because the length hasn't been there. But I also think there's weaker pitchers on the slate, so I'm not dying to stack the White Sox against him. Are the White Sox a primary option for you as an offense?
They look like they're going a bit over-owned right here. I wouldn't mind getting to them, but the ownership does concern me a little bit. They have a good chance of being a top value stack as well. We have them at 14.2%, which is higher than every team except for the Cubs on the other side of this game. But 15% total ownership, 9% chance of being the top stack. You know, again, like if they're going to pull 15% ownership, I would just rather be going to teams like the Dodgers and the Phillies who are popular, but just not as popular as the White Sox.
All right. So now things get a little bit clearer because we've got 3 games left to talk about and they are only on the DraftKings slate, not on the FanDuel slate. So things a little bit simpler from that standpoint. But Los Angeles Angels against the Toronto Blue Jays, Yusei Kikuchi on the mound for Toronto. And this guy just does not get any breaks in terms of scheduling. Just bringing up some of the starts that he's made, because you and I remember we made this point before, maybe a week or 2 weeks ago, talking about a Kikuchi start where it's like, sure, his numbers don't look great on paper, but they don't look terrible either. But you have to consider the matchups where he's only faced killer offenses. So he's a 3.47 ERA, a 4.35 FIP. The strikeout rate looks solid at 25.8%. But here's where we have to kind of weigh what we've seen out of Kikuchi. He's had slightly easier starts the last couple times out against the Reds and the Mariners. But before that, Yankees, Yankees, Astros, Astros, Red Sox, Yankees. And by the way, this was a healthy Yankees offense before everybody got hurt. So that's an unfair schedule to put somebody up against. So the fact that he's even escaped with numbers like this, it's kind of impressive. I like Yusei Kikuchi today. I understand this is once again not an easy matchup for him. but at least it's a matchup where the players strike out a lot in the Los Angeles Angels.
Yeah, and don't sleep on the Mariners there either. They have the fifth highest WRC plus in baseball this year. So like, that's not a cakewalk matchup either. In terms of talent, this price point is wrong on Kikuchi. He's, you know, like you said, 25, almost 26% strikeout percentage this year. He's walking way too many hitters, 15% walk percentage. And that's something that even in his recent starts, you know, where he's been good, 3 walks against the Reds, 3 against Seattle, 3 against the Yankees. So that's a legitimate concern. Like you never want to be putting extra guys on base anyway, but against a team that is as dangerous as the Angels, you certainly don't want to be doing that. But he does, like, he throws hard. He has good strikeout stuff. When you think about the other cheap pitchers on the slate, like Zach Eflin, I think is decent as well. But like Kikuchi, no way around it, is a more talented pitcher at this point than Johnny Cueto. He's more talented than Brubaker. He's more talented than Urquidy. He's more talented than Walker. So that I think stands out to me. And then while he is projected to be the fourth highest owned pitcher on the slate, it is still at least somewhat of an ownership saving and a salary saving off of somebody like Cueto. He's projected to be a little bit less owned than Urquidy as well. So I will be getting to Kikuchi just for the savings and because the upside is there. But this is another spot where I think I probably want to be on both sides, because while the Angels are getting some ownership and they are projected to be a little bit over-owned, they do still have a ton of power in their lineup as well.
Yeah, no, I think
one other thing to keep in mind is the status of Ohtani. If he's out, then obviously it looks a little bit better for Kikuchi.
Yeah, and so Ohtani, he's been dealing with back stiffness. The other guy, too, is Taylor Ward's been out of the lineup, and Taylor Ward's been incredibly good this year. So if neither of them are able to play today for the Angels, then it is a much easier matchup for Kikuchi than the numbers will look like on paper. In fact, actually, Taylor Ward's been quite a bit better as a hitter this year than Ohtani. Not that I would expect that to be the case going forward, but Taylor Ward has been one of the best players in the American League. And actually, last I looked, the only two players in all of the AL that are ahead of him in wins above replacement, it was Mike Trout and Aaron Judge. And then Taylor Ward was right behind those guys. So he's out, that's a loss as well.
Yeah, the Angels lineup here is definitely something to pay attention to, because Anthony Rendon is also out. So like Ward came back yesterday, but you know, I don't know if he plays today. Ohtani was out yesterday, don't know if he plays today. Like if you have Ward, Trout, and Ohtani in this lineup, you're talking about a lineup where like you have two obviously of the best hitters in baseball, one guy who's been one of the best hitters in baseball so far this year, may or may not continue, but then it drops off to a bunch of dudes that aren't very good. If you happen to not have one or both of Ward and Ohtani as well, you're suddenly looking at like a AAA offense plus Mike Trout.
Yeah, and that could, I mean, that's been the case for a lot of Mike Trout's career, the reason that he's never been in the playoffs. So definitely keep up to date with all the information there. Check out Live Before Lock later in the day. Like the video, subscribe to the YouTube channel, because they'll have a better sense of what the Angels starting lineup is going to look like. Also, shout out to Prize Picks, who's sponsoring today's show. If you guys are signing up at Prize Picks for the first time and use the promo code AWESOMO, get up to $100 bonus on your first deposit. So that's a really good way to help build your bankroll. Anytime you're signing up at somewhere new, try to look for promo codes, because you're getting free money in your pocket. All right. The other side of this game, Michael Lorenzen is pitching for the Angels. And Lorenzen, whatever, he does a little bit of everything, but he's not good at any of it. It's like, oh, he could hit, he could play the outfield, he could pitch, he could do a lot of things, but not really well. He's like a local diner. But he also has a matchup against the Toronto Blue Jays that's a really difficult one. The Blue Jays, I know they haven't been quite as good as we would have expected over the last few weeks, but this is still an offense that I consider one of the most potent ones in baseball. They're also going a little bit under-owned today, and the prices have started to come down a little bit. So this is a really interesting offense to me. The Toronto Blue Jays were the only projected for 7.5% ownership.
Yeah, I agree with you. They're projected to be under-owned as well, but second highest top stack percentage, only 7% ownership, like you said. It's just a situation kind of similar to the Dodgers, where I think everyone's going to be aware that it's a pretty appealing spot to get to, but it's just that you have some really cheap offenses that are also in pretty good spots. Like the Cubs are cheap against Cueto. Obviously, Cueto is going to be popular, but it's not like people actually think he's good. The White Sox are cheap against Thompson. The Padres are cheap against Brubaker. People are just going to kind of like flock to those spots. The Phillies are relatively inexpensive against Taijuan Walker. So I think you're just going to get builds where people just end up on those teams enough to where, not that the Blue Jays aren't going to have ownership, but they're just not going to have as much as some of these cheaper teams. And it makes me want to get there. You know, Lorenzen's been fine this year. I don't think he's bad, but only a 17.9% strikeout percentage, 4.18 xFIP. And like you said, the Blue Jays haven't been quite as good as we would expect. Their active roster only has a 97 WRC plus and a 147 ISO. But when you look at the names on this team, even if it's not the entire lineup, you know, but you're still talking about Springer, Guerrero, Bichette, Hernandez, Chapman. These are guys that individually we know have plenty of power.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a team that generally I like to get to whenever they're at lower ownership, and now they have lower ownership, they have a favorable matchup, and it's a small slate. So it all makes sense to me to get to Toronto as one of my higher priority stacks. Them and the Dodgers, probably the team I like the most for tonight's slate. Next spot to talk about, Houston Astros on the road against the Seattle Mariners. And what do you do with Logan Gilbert in this spot? Because he's one of the better young pitchers in baseball. The results have been a little bit up and down, but the pitching options are no good for tonight's slate. And he's in a tough matchup against the Houston Astros. So weighing all of the factors, how high of a priority is it for you to get to Logan Gilbert as a pitcher?
I think he's pretty interesting in tournaments on this slate in particular, because it's not like you have good options that are getting ownership and then another tier of good options that aren't. You have Joe Musgrove getting a ton of ownership, deservedly so. In terms of talent, though, there's just not a lot else on the slate. So it makes me a little bit more willing to go to Gilbert. Right now, he is projected to be a little bit underowned. I still think with the way ownership looks right now, I still probably play Gonsolin more than I play Gilbert, just because the matchup looks better for Gonsolin and the ownership's even lower than it is for Gilbert. But Gilbert's certainly somebody that in tournaments when pitching options are limited, I like banking on talent and just hoping that somebody like Gilbert steps up and has a good start. You know, his median projection is not going to be great because it is a very difficult matchup against Houston, but the ceiling is still very high when you talk about somebody that has the stuff that Logan Gilbert has.
Yeah, and on the other side too, I mean, I guess we could consider the Houston Astros offense just because it's a smaller slate, but at the same time too, I can't really prioritize them because there's so many pitchers that are worse than Logan Gilbert. It's also a road game for them. They're in a pitcher-friendly ballpark in Seattle. Houston is also somewhat expensive today. So with all the factors considered, are you looking to stack against Gilbert much? Because for me, I think I'll mostly be looking elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind if I do. Like, I'm never going to be upset about getting to a team like Houston when they're getting 5 or 6% aggregate ownership. But what I think is really going to end up driving how much Houston I get is where the ownership ends up on teams like the Dodgers and the Blue Jays. Because right now, when you have those teams who are clearly in better spots than Houston, and they're getting more ownership than Houston for sure, but they're also projected to be underowned, and they're the teams that, you know, I would really like to get to. And then you have, you know, like the Mets, I would probably get to before Houston. The Phillies aren't projected to be that much overowned either. The way ownership looks right now, I think it's kind of like Houston's fine. They're obviously very high upside offense, but they're a team that I would have trouble really prioritizing over those other teams. If, as it gets closer to lock, you have, you know, the Dodgers ownership is up and the Blue Jays are up and the Mets are up, and, you know, maybe Houston is down a little bit, then it's like, okay, well, I'll certainly play some more Houston because I don't like those other teams quite as much at their ownership. But right now, the way it looks, wouldn't talk anyone off of Houston. You're never going to be wrong going to an Astros stack at low ownership. But I think the ownership right now is low enough on these other teams that are a little bit more likely to succeed that I'd be getting to them first.
Yeah, and then also talking about the starting pitcher for the Houston Astros, probably one of the flukier starts we've seen in the entire season. Jose Urquidy had 10 strikeouts in his last start. For reference, he's made 8 starts this year and has 30 total strikeouts, and 10 of them came in one. So one of his starts makes up 33% of his strikeouts for the year. Prior to last start, he had 1 start the entire season with more than 3 strikeouts, and he struck out 10. This might drive up the ownership for Jose Urquidy just because people are going to be looking at game logs and be like, oh, maybe this guy is good and strikes hitters out now. I don't buy into it at all. I think that is one of the weirder strikeout flukes we've seen of the entire season. But how about you? Is there anything you saw with Urquidy maybe last time out or overall that you think the strikeouts are on the uptick?
No, the positive thing I'd say about Urquidy is that he's fully stretched out and he's only $6,000 on a slate with questionable pitching. He's thrown at least 90 pitches in 4 of his last 5 appearances. The Mariners, I mentioned it before, they've been good this year. They have the 5th highest WRC plus in baseball. They only have a 21.5% strikeout percentage, but it's a really cheap price tag on Urquidy. There's not a lot of good pitching on this slate. He is pulling ownership. He's projected for about 27, 28% ownership on DraftKings. 28% chance of being a top 2 value pitcher is the highest on the slate. So I don't mind getting there. It has nothing to do with the fact he struck out 10 guys against Texas last game, though.
I got to say, these sex bots that are showing up in the YouTube chat, just relentless with their messages. Josh and I were trying to figure out the other day what it is that they've targeted our YouTube channel and have decided that it's just going to post spam for us. My guess is, and I'm curious here if you have a conspiracy theory. I think that there's somebody with some sort of bot or YouTube algorithm that's looked at the demographics of our YouTube channel and said, like, these are the people that need porn right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a bad guess.
because I mean, I have access to the demographics of our YouTube channel, some of the back end stuff. And unsurprisingly, you guys, is because I'm sure a lot of you could relate to this, the chat is majority middle-aged men, like 99.8%. That is our audience. And that is what the porn bots have recognized as the people to go after. But porn bots, chill. Chill. And they're not even selling anything, as Josh pointed out the other day. It's, I don't understand what the upside is. What are they benefiting?
Yeah, I have no idea.
There's no link. They're not telling people to sign up anywhere. It's just weird, bizarre messages. Every once in a while, they're funny, but it is definitely starting to become a little bit annoying. But that aside, we've got one game left to talk about on tonight's slate: Pittsburgh Pirates, San Diego Padres. Is there any way around playing a whole lot of Joe Musgrove today? Because the pitching options generally suck. Joe Musgrove is incredibly high variance. When he's at home against the Pittsburgh Pirates, he's going to end up in the majority of my lineups by default today.
Yeah, I don't really see a way around it. If you're somebody that's coming in and just saying, like, I'm not going to play a 60-whatever percent owned guy, that's fine. It's baseball. There's enough variance that that's not a bad strategy. My guess is Sean Zahn's going to end up stacking the Pirates more than any other team because that's what he does. But for me, like, I don't play a strategy that's that contrarian. And I think that Musgrove's just head and shoulders better than every other option tonight. The matchup's really good against Pittsburgh. He's walking less than 5% of hitters this year, 25% strikeout percentage, 3.13 xFIP. He's good. And the thing is, too, like, even if Musgrove gives up a few runs, say he gives up 3 or 4 runs, gets like 14 fantasy points, 15 fantasy points, that's probably still a pretty decent result on the slate given how bad a lot of the other pitching options are. So I'm going to find it difficult to get away from him, I think. Again, if you're somebody that plays a little bit more contrarian than me, you're never going to be wrong just saying, like, okay, well, I'm going to throw some Pirate stacks in there and I'm not going to play the 60% on pitcher. And if this slate goes to complete shit, I'm going to be in a good spot. But not typically my approach to that extent. And so I fully expect that I'll just be heavy on Musgrove.
Yeah, and then on the other side of the game, JT Brubaker starting for the Pirates. He's a pitcher that I think is probably a little bit better than what he generally gets credit for from the public. I mean, credit for it. Nobody rates him. I was going to say he's underrated.
Nobody
but
in the public knows.
Yeah, yeah. No, nobody rates JT Brubaker, so whatever. It's a dumb thing to think about. But he does have a 4.64 ERA this year, but the underlying numbers look better, 4.01 FIP, 4.09 xFIP. The other thing, too, when it comes to Brubaker, he can generate some strikeouts. He's a 24.9% K rate. It was 24% last year. As far as contrarian pitching options go, I think we could do worse than Brubaker. And at 8K and at 6% ownership, I'd rather roster him than somebody like Johnny Cueto at 7,231% ownership. So Brubaker is a contrarian pitching option. I think we'll make it into my player pool.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty good pivot away from Cueto if you can find that extra money. You mentioned it, you know, Brubaker does have pretty good strikeout stuff. The Padres have been pretty average as an offense, about a 22% strikeout percentage, 97 WRC plus. But the big thing is that you're getting 6% ownership here. You could give me 5-1 odds on like anybody that has thrown a baseball in their life versus Johnny Cueto, and I would probably take it. So, getting that sort of ownership discount to Brubaker, even though the matchup is better for Cueto, it's pretty interesting to me. And then also there's just not a lot else in that price range that I think looks better. You know, like we talked about Gonsolin, we talked about Gilbert, but they're at a completely different price tier than Johnny Cueto. When you look in that, like, you know, 7,200 to 8K-ish price range, you have Brubaker, you have Taijuan Walker against the Phillies. I would rather get to Brubaker, especially if he's going to be lower owned than Walker. You have Lorenzen against the Blue Jays. I would rather get to Brubaker. So I'm with you. It's not a ringing endorsement of Brubaker so much as the fact that pitching isn't very good on this slate. I already said that I think I'm going to play a lot of Musgrove. I'm not going to be probably wanting to play a lot of like Musgrove plus Cueto because it's going to be so popular as a combination. So I think it's more likely I end up pivoting away from Cueto, getting the guys like Brubaker.
And then if I'm looking for one other thing also to kind of like, when it comes to Brubaker, the Padres are expected to be one of the more overowned teams on the slate. We have them projected for an 11% ownership share, 7.5% top stack odds. They are cheap, so the value looks decent, but either way, this is one of the most negatively leveraged teams tonight in the top stacks tool. And if I'm going to be underweight to the Padres, it kind of makes sense that I would get some exposure to Brubaker anyway.
Yeah, right there with you. Padres do offer some value. We have them with a 12.5% chance of being the top value stack on DraftKings, which is third highest behind the two Chicago teams. So you're probably just going to get some, you know, some additional ownership there. And it makes even more sense to get the Brubaker.
All right. That is going to do it for us today. We've covered a lot. We've covered multiple different slates, confusing games, but I think we tried to do it as best as we could. If you guys have any other questions, you could message me on Twitter and I'll try to answer it as best as I could. Don't forget, there's also the MLB Live Before Lock show later in the day. So like the video, subscribe to the YouTube channel, check that out later. Other than that, good luck today and have a good weekend, everybody.